Chapter 61 Jack 10 Jack's son Valano, Truthless of Shinovar, made very good time back to King Ovan's camp. He and his soldiers had abandoned their disguises as soon as they were out of sight of Crossguard, rendezvousing with the other three members of their group, who had been left to watch the horses. Still, despite the speed of their travels, it still took them a day and a half of hard riding to reach the main body of the army, or at least the place where Jack assumed it would be. Jack reined in his horse, calling halt to his group. The men, 13 in number, as two had been left behind when their horses gave out from the exhaustive ride, did as commanded, slowing around him. He scanned the horizon, looking for signs of the army's passing. They were close, that much he could sense, but how close? The endless Canaran hills rolled around him, similar to solidified dunes of sand. It was remarkably easy to hide even a large army among their valleys if one were clever and set a very good perimeter. And that perimeter was what worried Jack.
"Dismount," he commanded. "Teladoc and Jansmir will stay with the horses. The rest will continue with me on foot."
"My lord?"
asked Jershel, the squad captain. He was a smaller man, a quick and clever swordsman, the type that Jack preferred to work with. He also rarely questioned Jack's command, which was another qualifying feature for any man Jack chose to serve under him. This irregularity, however, was too much for even Jershel's obedient nature.
"We can ride forward without fear, my lord," he said. "We have the pass flag."
"I know," Jack said, climbing from his horse. "Do as I order."
"Yes, my lord,"
Jershel said, waving to his men. The appellation of lord still bothered Jack. As a truthless, he no longer had a title. The men, however, tended to have trouble following anyone they couldn't verbally distinguish as their better, so Jack suffered the usage. A bit of light flashed in the afternoon sun, sparkling just briefly atop a hill in the near distance.
"There,"
Jack thought, orienting himself. He watched carefully for a second sign of watchers, but unfortunately nothing obvious presented itself. Forced to trust his instincts, Jack made the best guesses he could, then led his men quickly toward a nearby mid-hill valley. Alone, he would have no trouble getting into the camp unseen. That, however, would be an unfair test of the army's perimeter. He was trained to avoid Shin warriors. Sneaking past Easterners was more bothersome than it was dangerous. However, slipping an entire party of men into the camp, that would be a true challenge.
"Let's see just how good your watchmen are, idiot king,"
Jack thought, whispering his men some basic instructions, then leading them in a careful path toward what Jack guessed was the center of the camp. They moved quickly at first. They were still far enough away that there was little danger of being spotted, so long as they kept to the backs of hillsides. Once they got near to where the perimeter probably began, Jack whispered a halt, then crawled up to the top of a hill to scout. The stone was cool beneath his fingers. Not rough, like most rocks back in Shinovar, but instead uniformly smooth, except, of course, for the palm-sized rings of stone that marked where long-dead rockbud polyps had once clung to the hillside. There were living buds, too, though they were closed at the moment. Jack crouched beside a particularly large one, its dome as wide as his forearm. "Ah," he thought, running his fingers across its brittle, rocky shell.
"Even the plants are blasphemous here. They use the stone to their own ends."
Of course, it wasn't really stone that the rock buds used to form their shells. It was the crom. The ubiquitous substance fell with the rain, providing nutrients for the rock buds and other plants, as well as giving them minerals to grow their shells. Jack sighed as he lay against the stone. This wasn't the way land was supposed to be. Instead of endless hills of rock, there should have been plains and grass, trees and streams. In Shinovar, there was no crom. Who would have thought that a bit of brown sludge could make such a difference? That sludge, however, hardened over time. In the Canaran peninsulas, dust could not settle and dirt could not form, for the crom fell and hardened everything into the same uniform stone. Buildings grew stalactites over time, and any object left alone for too long would eventually become one with the stone. It took years, but it would happen. This is what made the lands to the east both holy and desecrated. They were lands where stone truly ruled, lands where men were not meant to live. Only in Shinovar, where the steep mountains surrounded the entire peninsula, could man find soil and life. Green life. Jack had almost forgotten what real plants looked like. This geography, however, was very good for hiding. The numerous hills of the Canaran lowlands allowed Avin to set up a very strict perimeter. Keen-eyed scouts could watch from hilltops, spying intruders both intentional and accidental. Anyone who wandered into the perimeter was killed. No mistakes could be suffered. Unfortunately, Jack couldn't find any outposts. He studied the hilltops for a few careful moments, then decided he must have misjudged the distance to the camp's center. He turned and began to slink back toward his men, then froze in reflexive alarm as his senses warned of unseen danger. The arrows began to fall a few seconds later. Jack's men cried out, pulling out useless swords or hiding behind shields. Jack was close enough that several arrows flew toward him, and for a brief, joyous moment he thought one might strike him. His hand snapped out and grabbed the arrow. Death would not serve his master, and would break his vows, end his punishment. That could not be allowed, no matter how much his heart wished that it was an option. Two more arrows flew his direction, and he unfortunately was able to snatch them both. Below, Jershal pulled the pass flag from beneath his cloak and held it high. Jack smiled, despite himself. He hadn't ordered the man to bring the flag, nor had he ordered Jershal to display it. However, he had no right to complain. One did not choose clever men as companions if one did not wish them to do clever things. The arrows stopped falling as a group of ambushers revealed their position atop a nearby hill. Five of Jack's men had taken arrows, two of them serious wounds. Jack passed through the valley and walked up to meet the archer's commander as Jershal saw to the wounded.
"My lord," the commander said with surprise, recognizing Jack. "We had no idea it was you, my lord. We would never have fired if we had—"
"Your orders are to attack anyone who passes into the perimeter unless they raise the pass flag," Jack snapped. "Even me."
Yes, my lord,"
the captain said with embarrassment.
"I was watching for you," Jack said, trying to keep the testiness out of his voice. "How did you remain hidden so well?"
Failing to find Lady Yasna was one thing, but letting himself get ambushed? Had it finally happened? Had he spent so long among the heathens that he had begun to lose his edge? The captain waved to a member of his squad who pulled up a deep brown blanket crusted with a rocky substance, probably clay that had been awakened to stone.
"The watchman now lay beneath these," the captain said. "It was King Oven's idea."
"Clever," Jack admitted, studying the stiff contraption. The stone coloring blended very well with the hill rock. From a distance, a man hiding beneath it would be impossible to see, though the covering would be horribly hot during the day.
"We almost didn't see you, my lord," the captain admitted. "Actually, we only noticed you because one of my men heard your group scraping the rock."
"I should have had them remove their boots."
"It is a good thing you did see us," Jack said, eyeing his wounded men. "If I had managed to get a group of 12 soldiers past you, King Oven would likely have had your head. Lead me to the camp. I have important news for His Majesty."
Jack was already in a sour mood from the ambush. What he heard when he entered the royal tent did not improve his disposition. Oven was in council with the Aleth man, Balinmar, again. Jack paused just inside the tent door, frowning to himself. It was alarming how quickly Balinmar had gone from prisoner to adviser,
and even more alarming how quickly Avon had apparently come to trust the Stormkeeper. They didn't even know whether or not Belenmar's map through the caves would lead to Yasna's capture, yet Avon already treated the aging man as a respected counselor. The tent room was lush, as a king's should be, but Jack knew from experience that Avon cared little about such conveniences. He kept the rugs, pillows, and wood furniture out of a desire to maintain appearances and nothing else. The pavilion itself was large, with four rooms, but Avon kept mostly to the open central chamber. It was in this chamber that Avon now stood, speaking carefully with Belenmar, who sat in a plush wooden chair beside the tent wall. The two men stopped speaking when Jack entered.
What were they discussing?
He wondered with annoyance, then was further annoyed that he should care. He didn't trust Belenmar, true, but what did that matter? Jack wanted Avon to fail, all the better if the king were betrayed by one he had so foolishly accepted into his confidence.
You're back early, assassin, Avon said with his firm, yet not overly loud voice.
Dalena Colin marches on Crossguard, Jack announced, walking into the room.
Avon hissed a long, quiet breath through his teeth.
You are certain of this information?
No, Jack said. I was unable to validate my source. However, I believe the fact to be truth. When I entered Crossguard, I noticed something odd about the Aleth army, but couldn't quite place it. I later realized that the camp looked too orderly, too on guard. It wasn't the camp of a group that had just won a war, but rather that of an army preparing for battle. King Elokar executed Delanar's heir when he took Crossguard. Apparently, this act finally spurred the Tyrant Bane to action.
Avon's frown deepened, and he leaned one arm against a large wooden cabinet in thought.
That does sound like Delanar, Lord Avon, Belenmar said. The way he would let his son ride to Crossguard baffles me.
Arador Colin was allowed to become too independent, Avon said offhandedly. He wasn't raised to be the heir, and was given far too much leeway. He must have gone to Crossguard without his father's permission.
You know this from the songs? Jack asked.
Avon nodded slightly, his thoughts obviously still troubled. He tapped his fingers against the cabinet, the one piece of furniture Jack knew the king valued. It was the one that contained his birds. Only three remained alive.
Yet, Jack said, catching Avon's attention, forcing him to read Jack's lips, you didn't predict this possibility? You claim to have known that Delanar would stay out of the war, but he has not. What of your clever knowledge now?
Avon's eyes thinned.
You will not mock me again, assassin, he ordered, even subtly.
Jack's face flushed, and he noted a glint of mirth in Belenmar's eyes.
Control yourself, Jack told himself. Do not let these Easterners rile you.
Delanar Colin is a problem, Avon finally said. No, I didn't predict this. I've had trouble understanding Delanar recently. He used to be an easy man to predict. He was straightforward, a lover of strong martial ballads with firm, unyielding beats. But recently his tastes have become more longing. He still favors battle epics, but rather than songs of brilliant victors, he requests ballads about men who fight and tragically lose. Introspective pieces, questioning pieces. Delanar is not the man he once was, and I don't quite know what he has become.
Delanar Colin has grown increasingly unpredictable over the last few years, Belenmar agreed. It began with his wife's death, I believe, but the biggest changing point came when he lost both brother and eldest son to the traitor. I think you will have trouble predicting what he will do, my lord.
Who are you to speak of traitors? Jack thought with an inward snort.
All men are predictable, old man,
Arvin said curtly. And all men are erratic. We are beings of moods and passions. A man's taste in music can change from 1 hour to the next. It is understanding the whole and the meaning of that whole that gives insight to his actions. For while moods change, motives are stable. Dalinar Kholin has a strong affection for all members of his family. I did not predict his coming, but I can deal with it. In many ways, he will be an easier foe to fight than Elokar.
Unless Jasnah is with him, Jack said, carefully watching the king's eyes for a reaction. Jack was not disappointed. The mere mention of Jasnah's name made Arvin's eyes flash with momentary uncertainty. Dalinar isn't the one he fears at all, Jack thought, confirming his suspicions. It's the woman.
Arvin's dedication of an entire 10 squad of troops, along with 5 full shardbearers to hunt down Jasnah, was only further proof of that fact.
She won't be with Dalinar, Balinmar said. The caverns let out far from Kulinar. Even if she managed to find horses, she could conceivably have reached the city by now. But there's no way she could have arrived early enough to send Dalinar to Crossguard. He left of his own avail.
Jack bristled slightly at the man's tone. The old Stormkeeper didn't talk like a traitor or a conspirator, but instead like a kindly grandfather, one who suffered Jack and Arvin because they amused him, rather than because they had anything important to add. Everything about the Stormkeeper felt wrong.
You never told us how you escaped the attack on Ral Erim, old man, Jack said.
Of course he did, Arvin replied, or at least he told me. Do not think you are privy to all that I know and do, assassin. You are a tool.
And a slave, Jack added.
Even if Jasnah Kholin is with them, we will prevail, Arvin said, as if to bolster his own determination. She is a brilliant strategist, but every strategy can be broken. And every tactic countered.
True, Jack said, assuming your side has the better commander.
It was as close to a question of Arvin's abilities as he would let himself get. Horseback riding and foreign tongues could be taught in a secret classroom, but command skills? Those required practice and experience to develop. Clever though he may be, Arvin had neither. Arvin regarded Jack with a terse yet delving glance.
You underestimated me from the beginning, assassin. You assumed I would be turned over by my own people, yet I took their armies for my own. You assumed I would never reach Ral Erim, yet I passed through the oath gates with the power of the heralds themselves. Now you tell me I cannot win this war. Someday, perhaps, you will understand. One doesn't need brilliant military strategies if one can predict what his enemy is going to do.
And you can predict Jasnah? Jack asked.
Everyone is predictable, Arvin repeated.
Even you, Arvin Vaidenel?
Asked Balinmar, almost forgotten during the tense exchange between king and assassin. Arvin didn't hear the comment, but he saw Jack glance at Balinmar. The idiot king's eyes flicked to the side, focusing on the aged counselor.
Are you predictable, King of Yarkaved? Balinmar asked. What are your motivations? Why do you conquer?
Because no one has succeeded before, Arvin answered, almost without thought.
And that's all?
Balinmar asked curiously.
That's your grand purpose?
No man has ever ruled it all, Arvin said. 4,000 years of history, and no man has ever conquered all of Roshar.
And you would be the first?
Arvin paused, then nodded firmly. Balinmar studied the king's face, eyes thinning slightly.
There's more, he finally said. That answer is too easy, King Vaidenel. Perhaps you believe it, perhaps not. It is not, however, the reason you conquer. The lure of power motivates many men, true, but it doesn't inspire hatred and pain such as your eyes hide.
The room was quiet.
Go,
Avin finally said, pointing at the tent door.
Both of you, leave me.
Jack nodded, bowing slightly and retreating. Balinmar moved less alacritously, and as Jack left the tent, he caught sight of the old man's face, smiling broadly in satisfaction.